This is NPR Classical. I'm Tom Heisinger. There was a young pianist from Brooklyn who made a very big splash in the classical music world a few years back. She dreamed of a big career, graduated from Juilliard, had plenty of talent, but it seems there wasn't a lot of direction to her career. Not much, that is, until she found Bach's Goldberg Variations. She was pregnant at the time. She had a lot of time on her hands, and the music just seemed to kind of cry out for deep exploration. And she fell in love with the Goldbergs and did something kind of risky. She produced her own recording of the hour-long work, and it turned out to be a hit. Listeners loved it, and so did the critics. It essentially launched her career, and she's now known for her thoughtful, sometimes unorthodox, interpretations of Bach. She plays a lot of other music, too. Her name is Simona Dinnerstein, and she's sitting right here next to me in the studio. She's here to spin a few discs for us today. Welcome, Simona.
Thanks for having me.
Did I get that story right? Close?
I think so.
Mostly? It's not really the way that a lot of concert pianists start their careers. You're like diving into a single piece, producing your own recording, and making a success of it. And that must have been a strange turn of events for you.
It was very unexpected, and still haven't quite gotten over it and still don't understand exactly what has happened.
Well, your life has probably changed, I'm sure, since that Goldberg Variations recording came out and was so popular.
Yeah, I mean, it's completely different.
You know, a lot of pianists, they start by trying to win some competitions, and you didn't seem to take that route.
I didn't take the route. The route didn't choose me either. I mean, I think I just wasn't cut out for competitions. And I think I also was maybe a late developer. So everything's kind of happened to me in a different way than usual, but the way that was right for me.
You might not be cut out for competitions, but it seems you're cut out to a certain degree for taking risks. Do you think you're of yourself as a risk taker?
I guess I probably do take risks, and my husband thinks I'm a gambler. I mean, not with money, but
why does he say that?
Because if there's an option that is a little crazy, but it could work incredibly well, I will take that option. He wouldn't do that. He would do the opposite. He would do what he thinks would work out. I do what might have a small chance of working out and take that road.
Well, so, like being here today, you know, spinning records in some studio.
Sure,
in NPR.
Yeah.
You were actually interviewed by Steve Inskeep, the host of Morning Edition, a few years ago, and he was asking you about Bach, and you told him that the way I play Bach is close to my own personality. It's more inward-looking and meditative and rhythmically free. Are you just a little bit of an introvert?
Well, I think I am. I mean, I think I can't be entirely, since I'm a performer, you know. And I think
right.
The nature of performing is to be slightly exhibitionist. But I tend to be a thoughtful and I tend to be introspective, I would say.
And that rolls over into your music making.
I think so. I mean, I think that people play how they are, you know, as people. And I tend to like music that is sensitive, and I like slow music. I like stuff that's kind of dreamy. That side of things I'm drawn to more than stuff that's really loud and crazy.
We're not going to see you playing Liszt anytime soon, probably.
Well, I actually have
you
played
do.
Liszt, yeah. Interestingly, I've played all the piano concertos.
So there's your exhibitionist side coming out. Probably.
Yes, yeah. That's there, too.
You've picked some really great records today, and I guess because I'm running the show, I can do this. I'd like the listeners to hear a little bit of what you do, since we were just talking about your music. And let's listen to just a little bit of the Bach tune that opens up your latest disc, Bach, A Strange Beauty, it's called. And this is Ich Ruf zu dir, an arrangement for piano by Ferruccio Busoni. I remember putting this on when they sent me an advance copy of the disc, and I was bowled over by the first minute of it. And I'd like to listen to that right now. I think it's all about creating atmosphere, poetry, really, I think, through these small but very meaningful gestures. Now, hear how Simona creates this mood right from the start in the bass, where these low notes just smolder, and they almost give off a kind of a smell of incense. And then you'll notice how she kind of slowly increases the heat beginning about 40 seconds in, and at the 1 minute point, I think you're going to be totally under her spell. Simona, that's just terrific playing, I think. Did you go into that with the kind of strategy of setting? It seems like you set a mood right away.
Yeah, I mean, I think it starts from the very first note. And I recorded that on an amazing piano. And the piano just was made for that piece. I mean, it just had the most spectacular bass sound, and it just inspired me. I mean, I had an image in my head of how I wanted to play it, and then the piano did it, which was incredible.
Yeah. How you get that box of wires and hammers to make those sounds is it's pretty amazing.
Oh, thanks.
Phil Kennicott wrote about you in the Washington Post one time. He said, Simona Dinerstein is the sort of pianist who should play by candlelight in small rooms to rapt listeners sprawled on pillows and thick rugs. She can make the modern piano, a machine-age beast, sound as tentative and delicate as a simple reed flute piped on by a solitary shepherd. Did he overdo it there? But it's a beautiful
It's really lovely.
Do you think of yourself as that kind of pianist, you know, candles and incense?
I think of music as a kind of, it's a spiritual experience, listening to music and playing music, and that's how I view concerts. To be like that. And when I go to hear a concert, I'm always really excited if I hear somebody who makes me feel that way, like we're having a kind of mystical experience together.
Well, let's get to some of your favorites. And what do you have up for us first?
My first recording is one that I have loved for at least 20 years. It's been one of my favorite things in the world. It's Dido's Lament from Purcell's Dido and Aeneas, as sung by Kirsten Flagstad. And I just think that this is one of the most stunning things I've ever heard.
Do you remember when you first heard it? How you got turned on to it?
My high school, I went to this wonderful high school in Brooklyn called St. Anne's, and we did Dido and Aeneas in our high school. We performed it. And I actually played the recorder for Dido's Lament with the singer. We did a version where I played along. It was actually really interesting. And so that got me really hooked on the music itself. And then I found this recording just by accident. And I mean, it's not at all how period people sing this piece. I mean, it's she did it with a girls' school orchestra, and it's a very funny little orchestra, and then Elizabeth Schwarzkopf sings in this as well. But the way that she characterizes the music and embodies it and shapes it, and especially at the end, the very end, is just like you want to die. I mean, it's just incredible.
Well, that's what she did want to do. She did want to die in the opera. People have written songs about this forever. It's basically a story about someone who can't live any longer because their lover is leaving them.
Yeah.
And how many pop songs haven't we heard with that theme? But this one goes back to the spring of 1689 when this opera premiered. So a pretty universal theme. Let's hear it. It's Kirsten Flagstad, and here she is with Dido's Lament. Thank you. There's something very deep going on there, somehow. Kirsten Flogstad was the soprano, famous Wagnerian soprano, whose heyday was in the 30s and 40s, basically, singing Dido's Lament from Purcell's Dido and Aeneas. And I'm Tom Heisinger. I'm here with pianist Simona Dinnerstein, and she's spinning some of her favorite records for us. What's up next?
Next is a recording of Beethoven's Violin Concerto, played by the great violinist Yehudi Menuhin, with Wilhelm Furtwängler conducting the Philharmonia Orchestra. This recording, I was just completely stunned when I first heard it, and I listened to it obsessively for about a year, I think. I just listened to it over and over again. I went through a real Furtwängler phase. I mean, I still love Furtwängler, but I went through a phase of listening to a lot of Furtwängler. And I hadn't known Menuhin's playing as much. I'd heard some, but not a lot. And this is an early recording of him playing. And the thing that I'm struck by is the complete unity of vision between Menuhin and Furtwängler, because this is a total conception. I mean, it's not soloist versus orchestra. This is a vision of the music in all of its parts, and they draw it out. I mean, they create these incredible long lines. It's a complete joy to listen to it, because I think it's exactly how a concerto should be.
Is it that you like Furtwängler because you are also known, like Furtwängler was known for having a very elastic line, like looking at the line of the music and being able to stretch it and shrink it as you see fit for your own expressive purposes?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he was very famous for that, and even there's that famous story where he goes to hear Arturo Toscanini conduct something, and he stomps out of there saying, "Bloody time beater," as if Toscanini can only just keep the beat and does nothing else with it.
Right.
Is my theory correct?
I think I became obsessed with Furtwängler in my probably mid-20s, and I would say that I was very strongly influenced by him. I mean, I think that I already knew from when I was very young, I liked to stretch time in my playing. And, of course, I was taught not to do that. Then I listened to Furtwängler, and it just felt so right. I mean, I just couldn't believe what he did. It was just like, I remember listening to the Eroica, and I just thought, this is a man with the courage to do something with such strength of vision and purpose that nobody else does. I mean, I never heard anybody conduct like that. And I thought, well, you know, this is how I feel about music, you know, and I should do this when I'm playing. You know, I should forget that it's wrong because it just doesn't seem wrong to me.
No, it's right for you.
Yeah.
All right, let's hear it. It's Wilhelm Furtwängler and Yehudi Menuhin teaming up for the Beethoven Violin Concerto. Thank you. That's a little bit of the Violin Concerto of Beethoven with Wilhelm Furtwängler conducting a 1953 recording with the violinist Yehudi Menuhin, and it's one of Simona Dinnerstein's favorite records. She's here spinning for us today. And next up is
a recording of the Bach cantata Ich habe genug, as sung by Lorraine Hunt Lieberson with the Orchestra of Emmanuel Music, conducted by Craig Smith. And a friend of mine sent me this recording a few years ago, and I put on the first track, and I just was like, I stopped dead in my tracks. I mean, it just made me cry immediately. And the music itself is incredibly painful music, and Lorraine Hunt Lieberson's voice and just her phrasing is stunning, but also the oboe d'amore player, Peggy Pearson, is incredible. I mean, I've never heard anybody play like that. It's just the way that the two of them work with each other, oboe d'amore and voice, it's this exquisite duet where the line, they have this incredibly long line, and it's total chamber music between the two of them. It's really very, very special.
There are two cantatas on this disc, and they were the ones that were, I think the other one is My Heart Swims in Blood.
Mm-hmm, yes.
Right. And these two were staged especially for Lorraine Hunt Lieberson by Peter Sellers, and in this Ich habe genug, she's dressed in a hospital gown with all these tubes, medical tubes coming out of her. And I think this was recorded back in like 2002 or something. And of course, you know, Ms. Lieberson left us in 2006. She died of breast cancer. And I don't know the chronology if she was, you know, ill then. But to think of her in that staging, singing this music, which is basically about how to prepare spiritually, emotionally to die, to leave this world. And then you hear her super expressive singing in it, and it's heartbreaking.
Yeah, it truly is.
Some of Bach's Cantata 82. Ich habe genug. I have enough, with Lorraine Hunt Lieberson and Emmanuel Music Orchestra. That's a pretty amazing record.
It really is.
Thanks for bringing it in.
Yeah.
You know, you said before that it was sad, but you know, it is sad music. But there's something, at least for me, that it transcends all that because of its beauty. And because of the performance, that it ends up, for me, it ends up uplifting me.
Well, I mean, I think it's like any kind of really great, deep art. You know, you find that in painting, and that somehow something that is extremely painful is also cathartic. And I think that that's true of this particular cantata, in that it's just, it couldn't be more painful. And yet you feel like it's transcendent as well.
Do you play Bach every day?
Yeah, I do. I mean, every day that I play Bach.
Right.
Yeah. There is an Italian musical term that I really like, parlando, which is to make something speak, to speak through your phrasing or your playing. And I think that Bach's music is like the ultimate parlando, in that it feels like he is really saying something in a language that is much deeper than words. And to me, when I play Bach, I feel like I'm talking with that music, and in a way that I don't feel it with any other composer. And also it's so, you know, it's so contrapuntal that you're thinking about many different voices at the same time, and they all have their own character and direction, and it's an immense challenge to try to make all of those parts have their own personality and yet work with each other. So I find that I'm really drawn to that part of it, and also that's why I like to listen to Bach.
Pianist Simona Dinnerstein is here spinning some of her favorite records for us, and it's no surprise that you chose some Bach. Up next, what do I see on your list? Schubert?
Yes, this is one of my favorite songs by Schubert, Nacht und Träume, sung by René Fleming with Christoph Eschenbach playing piano. And I first heard this recording, they did an all Schubert album. I heard it back in, I think it was 96 or 97 when it came out. And
Let's see, we have it right here. We'll look in the back. 97, you're
97.
Right.
97. Yep. I remember I was a student at Tanglewood, and a friend of mine had been given a free sample of it, which is a few tracks of it, and one of the tracks was this one. And she and I listened to it all the time together. And I think that the thing about this recording, I mean, there's so many things about this that I just think are phenomenal. I mean, to start with, I think René Fleming is phenomenal. And also Christoph Eschenbach is a terrific pianist, and his sound is just so clear and beautiful, the way he matches what she's doing with her voice. But what she does in this is that she can take one note and change the character of that note while she's sustaining it. It evolves into something else. And I find that just so intriguing and compelling, because, of course, you can't do that on a piano. You can't, once you strike the note, the key, then it is what it is. So you have to use artifice to make that effect, where you can make it sound like you've actually transformed a sound after you've played it.
Right.
And so I listened to this a lot to try to hear what she was doing, and what did Christoph Eschenbach do to support that on the piano, and I've thought about how to do that when I play. And this is also, if you're talking about Furtwängler drawing out a phrase, I mean, they take this at an extremely slow tempo, and I know people, other musicians, who really can't stand this recording because of that, and I just think I love it because of it. I think that she gets to the heart of this music, and I don't think it's indulgent at all. I think it's just transformative, actually.
Let's hear it. It's Christoph Eschenbach at the piano and René Fleming, Schubert's Nacht und Träume, Night and Dreams.
Thank you.
That's Schubert's Night and Dreams with soprano Renee Fleming and Christoph Eschenbach at the piano. I'm Tom Heisinger here with pianist Simona Dinnerstein. She's playing guest DJ, spinning some favorite records. And, you know, speaking of this Night and Dreams, I've read in some papers that actually this is a song that you've been collaborating with, along with other tunes, with the singer-songwriter Tift Merritt in a new project. What's all that about?
That's a really exciting and creative project that we've been doing together. She's a very different genre than me.
Totally.
Yeah, but we became friends a few years ago when she coincidentally had to interview me for an article that was a feature in Gramophone, and Gramophone had her interview me because they wanted a musician from a different genre to interview me.
Oh, wild.
And we wound up having a really long talk and just really hitting it off and feeling like we had so much in common and started really listening to each other's music. And we connect as musicians. I mean, as people too, but as musicians, I think we have very similar sensibilities. And so I thought it'd be so great if we could do a project together. And the first song that I envisioned us doing together was this Schubert song, Night and Dreams. And I had a vision in my head of how Tift would sing it and what it would sound like. She's never sung any classical music at all.
Right, and for our listeners who don't know Tift Merritt, she's a wonderful singer-songwriter. You might, if you had to put her in a category, I mean, she used to be called alt-country, but she can rock out, but she's also interested in a lot of kind of folk and country influences, but, you know, far cry from Bach.
Yeah, but she has a lot of soul in her her singing. And so I thought, okay, she'll sing it in English. And I had this idea that in part of the song, I would play the melody and she would play the harmonica. And so we wound up doing this whole thing. We got a translation, then she rewrote the translation. She rewrote the words to make it more like a song that she would sing. And I kind of changed the piano figures to different kinds of rhythms. And she sang it as she sings. It sounds, you know, like a country blues.
Wow.
And then she plays the harmonica in the middle. And it's just, I think it's stunning. I couldn't believe how well it worked.
So when can we hear you do this?
Well,
are you touring with this?
We just toured with it, but I'm hoping that we're going to do a tour in a year's time. And it looks like we're going to be making a recording of it, too. So I'm really excited about that.
Oh, that's great news.
Yeah.
We classical people don't just listen to classical music. There's a lot of other music I'm sure you listen to. And what do you have next for us?
If I was going to pick one song in the world, which is my favorite song, this is it. Suzanne by Leonard Cohen.
No. It's my favorite song.
Is it?
Oh, totally.
Really?
Someone asked me a couple years ago if you had to pick one favorite song.
Yeah? This would be it? Wow. I actually just commissioned the composer Daniel Felsenfeld, who's a wonderful composer, wrote a set of variations on Suzanne for me.
Wow.
And it is so beautiful. I've been playing it a lot, and it sounds almost like Benjamin Britten meeting Leonard Cohen. It's pretty crazy. But anyway, this version that we're going to listen to is my favorite version of it sung that I've heard, which is with Judy Collins singing it. I have to say I prefer it. I don't mean any sacrilege, but I prefer it to Leonard Cohen himself singing it.
Well, I think this is the version that most of us first heard. I mean, this song brings up so many memories for me, and the poetry is so beautiful. I was very young when I heard it. It was my brother's girlfriend who had a beautiful voice and played guitar, and she sang it around a campfire one night. I think that was about 1968, and I thought, wow, this is just an amazing song. And then that started my, you know, lifelong love of Leonard Cohen's music.
The thing I love about it is not only does she have such an incredible voice, it's so beautiful and pure, but she sings it almost without emotion. I mean, there's something about it that's almost without expression, and the fact that she does that makes it so much more expressive. You know, it's so understated the way she sings
right.
The song.
Okay, let's hear it. Wow, we have a favorite song together. That's nice. Judy Collins and Leonard Cohen's Suzanne.
Suzanne takes you down to a place by the river. You can hear the boats go by. You can spend the night forever. And you know that she's half crazy. That's why you want to be there. And she feeds you tea and oranges that come all the way from China. And just when you want to tell her that you have no love to give her, she gets you on her wavelength and lets the river answer that you've always been her lover. And you want to travel with her, and you want to travel blind, and you think you'll maybe trust her, for she's touched your perfect body with her mind.
A little bit from Suzanne, a great song by Leonard Cohen with Judy Collins and a famous version that she put on her fourth or fifth record back in 1965 called In My Life. Simona Dinnerstein is here. I'm Tom Heisengutz, NPR Classical, and we're spinning records together. Simona has picked the music, and, you know, before we go on, I have to mention something that, you know, you're a pianist, but there are really no piano records. You didn't bring any piano records.
Didn't know.
What's up with that?
To be honest, I don't listen to that much piano music anymore.
Really?
Yeah.
You're too busy playing it.
I'm playing it. I find it inspiring to listen to other kinds of music, other instrumentalists, especially singing. And the past year, I've been primarily listening to non-classical music.
Mm-hmm. What are some of the non-classical things you've been into lately?
Nick Drake.
Oh, yeah, sure.
I really like him a lot. And, a fun group called the Avett Brothers.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I enjoy them.
Yeah, they're very good.
David Gray, do you know him?
Right? Yeah. Uh-huh. Oh, you have very eclectic taste. You have something next that looks very different from what we've been listening to.
Yeah, this next one is a 16th century French dance played by Calliope, which is the Calliope Renaissance Band. And this is meaningful to me on a few different levels. One, I think it's an incredible performance. But Calliope is a group that's made up of four players. And two of them, Lucy Bardo and Ben Harms, who are married. Lucy's the gamba player, and Ben plays percussion instruments and recorders. They are very good family friends, my parents and of me. And my first memories of going to concerts were of going to hear Calliope.
Mm.
And I think that Lucy's playing, her gamba playing, has been extremely influential and inspiring for me in terms of how I think about music. Because she, and in fact the whole group, but she in particular, has a certain freedom of rhythm that is so natural and fresh, and it always feels like she's making up the music as she goes. And I don't feel that about a lot of early music players, but their group, I remember they used to be on the radio all the time when I was growing up, and I could always tell when it was them because it sounded like it was being invented, you know, that it sounded almost like jazz, but Renaissance jazz, you know. And this particular piece, Ben and Lucy played at my wedding.
Oh.
And so I love it to listen to it.
She also has a particularly flowing singing line to her playing, too. That's very nice.
She does. Yeah, it's beautiful.
So let's hear some of this. There were French dances from the 16th century, right?
Right.
Thank you.
that was the group Calliope playing a 16th century French dance. We heard the gamba player Lucy Bardo playing that particular one.
And it's Simona Dinnerstein and me, Tom Heisinger, here spinning some of Simona's favorite records. So, Simona, we have time for one more, and what do we have?
Okay, the last one is a song by Tift Merritt that she's singing called Feel of the World. It's from her new album, See You on the Moon. And that's a great album, but I think it's quite diverse, actually. But Feel of the World is probably my favorite song on the album.
What do you think it's about? I was trying to figure out what it's kind of a love song, but...
Well, it's apparently inspired by her grandparents.
Oh.
It's the story of their love for each other.
The first lines go, I'll tell you what I miss, California and horses, down by the sailboats where we waded in, the feel of the world in my hands, my hands.
I think that is one of her grandparents talking to the other grandparent, a dead grandparent talking to a living grandparent, if I have that correct. But I just think the feeling of this song is it's so moving, and her timing when she sings it is, it's just an incredible sense of rhythm. You know, she just is always a little off of the beat, and it makes it so much more expressive. And when we did our program together, I said to her, you know, I've been listening to this song obsessively. There was one time I was stuck in an airport somewhere. I think I listened to it like 6 times in a row. and I called up Tift and I was like, Tift, could I play this song with you? I know you probably don't want to do it with me, but I really, really would love to do it. And she was like, yeah, let's do it. And so she gave me the chord chart, and I had to just improvise, which I've never done. And at first I felt really shy about it, but then I started to really just kind of go with it and go with her phrasing, her rhythm. And I think it's really great what we're doing now. And she really loves it. It's very different than what's on her recording, but it really works.
Because the recording is kind of a really kind of a pop rock song with a great hook and a certain world weariness to it,
yes.
All served up by her voice, which is just a thing of natural beauty, I think.
It's
very unadorned, unpretentious, and just she's a great singer.
Yeah, she sings right from her heart.
Tift Merritt there with a track from her latest record called See You on the Moon, and that's Feel of the World. And it was chosen for us, like all of the music that we've been listening to, by pianist Simona Dinnerstein.
She is just an inspiration when we're working together, playing concerts. I find it amazing how she is so in it. You know, we get off stage at the end, and she's like shaking from it. You know, it's very, very intense.
Have you learned a couple things from her working with her?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Such as?
Well, I mean, I think the way she phrases and as I said, her sense of rhythm is unique. And her intensity of being involved in the music. I mean, I think I'm like that as well, but she has to deliver it out of her body. You know, like it has to go from her into the audience and she's looking at them, you know, and she's singing, and there's a kind of directness there and power that is really, it's stunning.
Simona, you chose some great tunes.
Thank you.
And thank you so much for coming by, and come back sometime.
I'd love to.
Spin some more.
Yeah, great.